x final at t equals big T. So what we're going to do is to compute the amplitude for this process. X final at time big T, x initial at time 0, is the integral over the space of all paths leading from here to here, weighted by e to the I action divided by h bar. So this is over Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? Means I can start on time and know it.
Question.
Yes.
Is this a free particle?
We're going to do a free particle explicitly, yes. I hadn't said that yet. Yes, free particle.
Okay.
We'll do something more adventurous a little bit later. Right. So let's try again. Everything I've said so far is on here and is moderately obvious. But what I want to do is to calculate the amplitude for a particle start at t equals 0 at x initial, end at t equals big T at x final. And we're going to do it by looking at the path integral, where this is the integral over the space of all paths. And this is going to be, well, starting at obeying these boundary conditions. And S is the action for the particle. The action, I remind you, is the integral from 0 to t dt of the Lagrangian for the system in question. So in principle, it will be a function of x and x dot. So I wanted to start off by doing just a free particle. There is only kinetic energy, and it's equal to 1/2 mx² squared. So the question that we need to answer is how we propose to do this integral. Now, let's go back to this integral that we looked at yesterday briefly. We argued that if you had an integral of that form, what you did was to find the extrema of f so that happens at, let's suppose there's only one, z equals z0, where f prime of z0 is equal to 0. And then we expanded about that point. So you write z equals z0, f of z is f of z0 plus, in principle, z minus z0 f prime, but that happened to go away, plus 1/2 z minus z0 squared f double prime. And then if we wanted to, we could keep going. So the steps were: find the extremum of F, and then perform an expansion about Z0. So if you think about lambda as being 1 over h bar, this is a sort of prototype of what you have here. What you have got here is all possible paths. Now, you know that if you extremize S, then you'll end up with the classical path. And then you will say that the little fluctuations, that is to say, the deviations from being classical, well, the classical path, of course, doesn't require you to do any integration, you see. The classical path is just simply a point over here. The classical path is just a path here, what you'd expect in classical mechanics. And that, so the classical path will be modified quantum mechanically by deviations from the classical path. So, taking account of all of these sort of deviations from the classical path, the actual things that you've got to integrate over, is analogous to finding the quantum mechanical corrections to some classical process. So the strategy is going to be find the classical path and then look at what you've got to do to integrate over all paths. So, what do you do? We know that the Lagrangian is this thing, a half mx dot squared. So the first step will be to find the path, the classical path, that starts at t equals 0, at x equals xi, and ends at x final at t equals big T. How do you do that? Well, we all know how to do that. What you do is you look at the action and you extremize it. Extremizing the action reproduces the classical equations of motion, which are given by d by dt, the partial differential of the Lagrangian with respect to x dot, minus dl by dx equals 0. So those are the classical equations of motion. Do you all know how to derive this equation? Okay, good. So, oh, here they are. Our first step then will be to find this classical thing. Well, if we just draw. I mean, it's sort of labeling the obvious, really. I mean, if t goes that way, here is x initial, here is x final, then what you do is you just simply have a straight line between the two points. Let's do this in a pedestrian way. If I ask what are the Euler-Lagrange equations coming from this, it's independent of x. The differential with respect to x dot is just equal to mx dot. So, of course, you get x double dot is equal to 0. In other words, it's just simply constant velocity. X dot, well, let's see. Probably the easiest way to do this is just to simply write it out. X, the solution of this equation is of the form AT plus B. And the boundary conditions were at T equals 0, X equals X initial, so B equals X initial. And at big T, you're supposed to end up at X final. So that's AT plus X initial. So A is equal to X final minus X initial over big T. So the classical path is just going to be X of T equals X final minus X initial over T times T plus X initial. And you can see that that obviously gives us the right answer. So that's the first step. Now what you need to do is to calculate the action for the classical path. That's analogous to calculating F of Z naught. That's equal to the integral from 0 to big T over half of mx dot squared. X dot from here is just x final minus x initial over t. So the whole thing is equal to the integral from 0 to big T, a half m x final minus x initial all squared over t squared. This is fortunately independent of time, so you can do the integral, just constant, and you will end up with m x final minus x initial squared over 2t. So now we're in a position where we can actually write out what the path integral is going to be. Something. The classical path we said was x final minus x initial t over big T plus x initial. That was a classical path. Let's actually call this x classical. CL for classical. So let's try to evaluate this thing. Xf t, xi 0, is equal to the integral over all paths of e to the I s over h bar. So the way to integrate over all paths is to say that you would like to regard x of t as being x classical plus a small variation, which accounts for the deviations from the classical path. What we want to do is to integrate over all of these things. We're expanding about this classical thing, and we're going to let this thing represent the quantum fluctuations. So that really comes in two bits. You've got to figure out, first of all, what the action is, and you've got to figure out what the measure is. So, let's first of all figure out what the action is going to be. The action of x classical plus delta x of t is going to be, well, you just substitute in here, and what do you get? Well, you're going to get a half m of x classical dot plus delta x classical plus delta x, which you expand out as integral t half m x classical dot squared plus half m delta x times x dot classical. There should be dots there. Twice plus half m delta x dot squared dt. This is just what we have already worked out. This term here has got to give you zero because you already know that the equation of motion makes the linear term disappear. I want to keep that somewhere, so let's put it over here. If you do not believe me, the simple thing to do is to take this term and integrate by parts, and you get zero. So this term, just that one we want to look at, the term linear in the small fluctuation, that's going to be the integral over t delta x dot times x dot classical. Now recall that we wanted the particle to start at x initial and end at x final. That means that at the end points, delta x must be equal to 0, because x classical is already xi at t equals 0 and xf at the final point. So if you try to evaluate this, what you'll get is integrate by parts. Let's put in the limits 0 to t. So you take the derivative off here and put it here. So you get the integral from 0 to t with a minus sign, delta x times x double dot classical, and then there will be a boundary term. Delta x times x dot classical, and that's evaluated at the two endpoints, 0 and t. This is 0 by the equation of motion. For x classical, x double dot classical is equal to 0. This one vanishes by the boundary condition. So this term will give you absolutely nothing. That's always got to happen. if you do a problem where the term linear in delta x does not vanish, you have made a mistake. So let's attempt now to ask ourselves what this path integral is going to be. Let's see. I want to get rid of, can I get rid of this bit? So we end up with x final t, x initial 0, equals. Well, since x of t is x classical plus delta x, and this is fixed, when we integrate over all paths, we can replace this by x classical plus delta x. And up in the exponential, we have e to the I over h bar. Now let's look at this thing again. This first term is just the classical action, which I'll write as s classical. Or then there's a term involving the fluctuations, which we can say is s quantum. In principle, S quantum could go on forever, because it might be that your expansion didn't stop after the quadratic term. But in this particular case, we only have quadratic terms. So this is S classical plus S quantum. But the variation of X classical is equal to 0. Is just simply the fixed classical thing. So at that point, we can forget that. This only depends on x classical, so it can come out of the whole integral. And you're left with e to the I m over 2h bar integral of delta x dot squared here dt. So that is a sort of intermediate form of the answer. And if we stick in x classical, we will discover this already looks like e to the I m x final minus x initial all squared over 2 h bar big T, corrected by integral d of delta x e to the I m over 2 h bar integral from 0 to t delta x dot all squared dt. If you stare at this expression, it should already look familiar. Because this term here, if you think about it, is really just e to the p squared over 2m times I and then h bar, if you think about it classically. So that's sort of what you'd expect for a typical evolution of a free particle. It's just the energy operator divided by h bar integrated over time. So we should have expected that. In some sense, this bit here doesn't really do very much. Yes? Yes. Big T on the bottom. Well, no. Remember that p is x. Yes, on top, I'm sorry. I was thinking something else when I was trying to answer the question. So it is sort of the right kind of thing. And this sort of quantum piece is expected to be relatively simple. Now, how do we calculate this thing? Well, that is a bit tricky. In many cases, you can just simply calculate this by saying that you've got to have a normalizable wave function, but it doesn't work terribly well here because free particles are a little bit singular. So let's probably, well, certainly the only time in my lectures, but probably David Tong will do something similar for quantum field theory. So let's actually do this calculation explicitly so that we don't become end up in a mess. Now, how do you calculate this? We already know how to calculate it. It's just that we don't realize we know how to calculate it. The way to do it is to explicitly divide the path up and discretize things, and then take the limit as n goes to infinity. So here is x initial. Here is x final. And let's sort of divide this thing up into n intervals. So here is the straight line between the two points. And so delta x1 will be how far you deviate from the path up here. Delta x2 will be how far you deviate up here, etc. And there will be n minus 1 of these things. What is meant by d of delta x? That simply says you take each of these delta x's as independent things. And remember that each of these factors came with an unpleasant factor of I m over 2 pi h bar delta t being the distance in time between these two points. So that big T is n times delta t to the 1/2. So that's what we meant by d of delta x. Now, what about these fluctuations? We need to find delta x dot. But that's just the same thing as, at some given point, xj minus xj minus 1. The difference in variations divided by delta t. That's because this is a position at one point, this is a position at the next point, so if you're interested in the variation of the derivative, it's just the slope of the two things. That is to say, suppose that you had this being xj, this being xj minus 1, then the velocity is basically the slope of those things. And you recognize this as being the discrete version of the first derivative. So that means we can now construct this object here. You are going to get e to the I m over 2 h bar integral. That becomes the sum from j is 1 to n minus 1 of this thing squared. So it's going to be delta xj minus delta xj minus 1 squared times delta t squared. That's the discrete version of this thing. That's this thing. So what we're actually going to do, you see, is here is the point xi at t equals 0. Here is the point x final at t equals big T. The classical path is a straight line from the two. But what you're doing in the path integral is you're saying there are lots of neighboring paths. For example, something which looks like that, or something which looks like this. You're going to sum over all of these possible paths with this particular weight. This, the differential of delta x. I could have called them yi's or something else if that would have made it clearer, but I think that that's what's usually done.
So where does the x delta xj dot?
This is delta xj dot because it's the slope, so it's the difference between the two divided by the time. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, but I'm just, I don't quite get where that came from.
Oh, it comes from this one.
Oh.
That expression over here, star, is the same as this star. It's not up here.
Excuse me.
But now what I'm going to do, I want to evaluate this expression here. Yeah.
Where is the dt in the integral in the sum?
Oh, it's summed over all points. If you discretize an integral, you replace it by a sum. So the analog of dt, oh, it's not dt, you're absolutely right, I'm sorry. We need to multiply by dt.
Thank you.
So, the definition of this blue thing, we've got all the bits here, let's assemble them together. So we're going to end up trying to say that the interval d of delta x is equal to product I 1 to n minus 1. D of delta xi, D of the I n over 2 xi, sub I 1 n minus 1, x, j, and then there's this factor here to normalize everything.
You've got e to the I axis on the left as well, haven't you?
Sorry?
You've just written the measure on the left, but you mean e to the I axis?
Oh, e to the I axis, yeah.
On the right side, you have an integral.
Right. What do we got there? I think we have got there. And here I mean that delta x n is equal to 0 because that corresponds to the endpoint. And delta x 0 is the other endpoint. So this one is x final What is x initial? Now, this unfortunately is a bit of a mess. Because this thing mixes up all the different x's. The way to write this is in the following way, using matrix notation. Someone should have protested that that thing should not be to the 1/2, but to the n minus 1 over 2. That's because there are n minus 1 of these integrals.
Substituted into the discretization, you have delta xj plus 1 minus delta xj, but before you had j minus j minus
1. I'm not sure. We may have shifted by 1, but only inadvertently. So here is y. Here is a discretization from x initial to x final. And you need n minus 1 intermediate points.
Right.
So here we have x delta x n minus 1, delta x n minus 2, so you'd have delta x 1. Now, what you want is the kinetic energy, so you've got to figure out the kinetic energy for each interval. So suppose that the have a chalk crisis here. Suddenly there was no chalk again. So let's suppose that the points were, this one is definitely zero. So here you have that. So you've got to, in this particular case, you'd have a path that looks like this. So there's got to be n segments. So at this end, let's start at this end. So in this segment, you have x1 minus delta x0 is 0 because this endpoint is fixed. From this one, you'd have delta x2 minus delta x1 squared. And then you keep going until you got to here. Let's say here, delta x n minus 1 minus delta x n minus 2 squared. Then you'd have, from here, you'd have delta x final minus delta x n minus 1 all squared. But that one is 0.
No, what I was saying was a very specific point here. Before,
all right. You're absolutely right. And whilst it is, there are n minus 1 intervening x's, but n segments.
But in your exponential, you have the sum from I to 1 per minus n minus 1.
Oh.
So I think
it's n minus 1 there.
Yeah.
In your sum. Yeah.
Delta x zero is delta x zero delta x and these two endpoints.
Yes. And then the last one.
No, we have any question.
I think if you want from I to one, then it depends.
No, we have any question.
Now, you just change x.
Right. Now, I'm going to do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. X, j minus 1.
No. J minus 1.
You're right. And it's j plus 1, but go not to n minus 1.
All right.
Yeah.
J plus 1.
That's
right. That's right. This is what I should have. And you see, what you really have done is you've done this kind of decomposition, and you have split the path up like this. So the endpoints are zero, and there really are n minus one things. So you want to rewrite this as a matrix, M. It's an n by 1 by n by n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix, which I'll just call MJK. Let's write out explicitly what it is. So we want it to reproduce this. So let's think carefully about this. How many times does delta x something squared appear? Well, it appears once from the upper end point of the jth one, once from the lower end point of the j plus oneth one, and once from the upper end of the j minus oneth one. It's probably easier to see here, actually. How many times does delta x2 squared appear? Once from here, once from here. How many times does delta x1 appear? Once from here, once from here. That's twice. So whatever happens with this matrix, it's going to have, along its diagonals, twos. Then, what about the cross terms? There's a delta x2, delta x1, which will appear with a factor of minus 2. Delta x3, delta x2, with a factor of minus 2. That's minus 1. Minus 2. Right. So it happens twice. So you sum over these things twice. So you get minus 1 on the off-diagonal components. And zeros everywhere else. You'll notice that this is a symmetric matrix. So we now need to do this integral. Now, at first sight, I think I can get rid of this now. This looks like an impossible task. Sorry? The 1 over
the V of dx j minus dx j. It's
bombed with lots of you should have it.
Thank you for keeping it in order.
All of these things are a little bit intricate, so you need to be very careful with them. So it's very good that you keep them careful. So, I want to contemplate how to do integrals of this form. Let's call these variables something else.
the symmetric matrix. How do you do an integral of that form? How about over R? So I'm regarding here y as a column vector. Components. About this math problem for a little bit. Thought this had to do that. Maybe not. Because N is a symmetric N by N matrix, you can diagonalize it by an orthogonal transformation. Diagonalized symmetric matrix.
No, I mean why M is N times N matrix.
I just said it's N by N matrix for the purpose of this problem here. We'll have to go back to being N minus 1 by N minus 1 there, but I don't want to write N minus 1 anyway. So there's going to be a diagonal matrix, D, which is equal to O transpose M O. Which I can infer, and so O times D times O transpose is equal to M, or the orthogonal transformation is one for which O transpose O is the unit vector. So this expression sitting up here can be rewritten as D to the I lambda Y transpose. N, which is O diagonal O transpose Y. I don't think we're going to all Y. That's quite like that. So the thing to do is to change variables to Z. O transpose Y is equal to Z. Alternatively, Y equals O times Z. What's DYI? Product over DYI is going to be the Jacobian, the determinant of O. But for orthogonal matrix, the determinant is equal to 1. So this integral becomes integral 1 again of d z I, d z I lambda z diagonal z. And that, of course, is a diagonal matrix. You can just rewrite this in the following way. When ui are the diagonal entries in V, and you can think back to make it tell whether these things are just the same thing as the eigenvalues. Which is the same as the eigenvalues of M. So we can now do this integral. This integral is going to be just factorized now into a product, root pi over I lambda ui all to the 1 half. And if you like, that's the same thing as pi over I lambda the n over 2, and then the product of all of ui minus a half. But the product over all of the ui is the same thing as the determinant of d. But def d is the same as def n, because O is orthogonal. Let's take the determinant of this relationship here. Def d is equal to def of O transpose, def of n, def of O of O. But def of O is plus 1, so those are just 1, and you get def d is equal to def m. So this is equal to pi over I lambda to the n over 2 det m to the minus 1 half. So that's how you do these integrals. Let's do this integral. There's an I m over 2 pi h bar delta t to the n over n minus 1 over 2. Then there is what you get from doing this. There's an I m over 2 h bar delta t. Have I lost a pi somewhere? No. I have not lost a pi anywhere. Let's use this formula. Pi over I m 2 h bar delta t to the n minus 1 over 2. And then there's going to be a det m to the minus a half. Somebody should have spotted something, which I think has gone wrong. Did anybody see something that I have left out? I think that there are n of these, not n minus one of them.
Yep, there is one factor of the delta. There was one factor behind the integral.
Right. The factor, so there n of these, because remember these come from doing n momentum integrals, not n minus 1. So please correct that. I actually looked at my notes and I remember that.
But it is still n over 2.
It is n over 2, yeah.
But you erase the n over 2.
Right. So, now you see that there's a miraculous cancellation. N minus 1 over 2 of these and n of these is going to give me the same thing as I m over 2 times h bar delta t to 1 half delta n, which is n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix minus 1 half. So, are we all moderately happy so far? Record this somewhere where it will not get lost, because I'm going to need all of this form to calculate the delta of n.
Just one form?
Well, I'd be happy with 5, 6.
So, can I get rid of all of this? Tell me when I can. I'm just reminding myself this is an n by n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix. Because there were, one at a time, because there were n minus 1 integrals over x, we divided the strip into n intervals, so there were n minus 1 intervening x's. So that's why there are n minus 1. Now, what was your point?
Oh, so we didn't exponentiate earlier.
Don't xn be 0.
Right.
So suppose that M n is an n by n matrix with 2's along the diagonal and minus 1's everywhere else. Now, I think there are many different ways in which you can calculate this determinant. So I don't know which your favorite is. One way is to guess the eigenvectors and compute the eigenvalues. If you do that, you will discover, I believe, that there are n minus 1 with value 1 and 1 with value n plus 1. That, however, requires imagination to do, because it's not so easy to guess the eigenvectors. So I don't want to do that. I want to do something pedestrian and dull, because it's easy to reproduce such things. So I'm going to invent a new matrix, which is a function of a dummy variable, u, which is 2 cosh u along the diagonals, minus 1, above and below the diagonals, and zeros everywhere else. So I'm interested in what happens when u equals 0. let's compute the determinant of this. So, start here. 2 cosh u will be multiplied by something, but it's going to be the determinant of the submatrix. But that submatrix is just the same matrix that we had to start with, but n by minus 1 by n minus 1. So this is equal to 2 cosh u times det of m, same matrix, meaning 2 cosh u along the diagonal, minus 1 up and down, but n minus 1 by n minus 1. The next term you get by starting here, this is a bit more tricky. So if I have this term, I will end up with this matrix here. So you can see by transposing rows and columns that this is the same thing as det of m n minus 2 from the matrix in blue.
N plus 1.
But the continuous sign, the first one was 2 push the minus minus 1.
The only one that I think when I got the one that's been back to the original point.
Akusa is right, I think, because you've got a minus sign which comes from the fact that you are taking the second column, and you have a minus sign which comes from the minus one in the matrix.
I think you've done it. N minus 2 is such, I think you've done
it. Except minus 2, I think I've done it right.
Yeah. Yes. You've got it.
Sorry, three minus 6.
Three minus 5.
So this is a nice recursion relationship for def n. Is solved by det m n is equal to alpha e to the nu plus beta e to the minus nu. Right. Alpha and beta can in principle be functions of u. Does anybody want me to try and prove that? Or is that moderately obvious?
Could it be a function? But then, does anyone want to prove that this really does satisfy this recursion?
No, yes, maybe. No. All right, believe me. Good. That saves a lot of trouble. What is det of M1? Well, that's just 2 cosh u. What is det of M2? Might help to look at what M2 is. That's 2 cosh u minus 1 minus 1, 2 cosh u. So its determinant is 4 cosh squared u minus 1. What then are alpha and beta? So you just substitute in this formula with n equals 1 to get this, and this formula with n equals 2 to get that. Do you want me to go through that particular calculation? Yeah.
It seems to me we're kind of living in, we're kind of cheating to talk about the determinant of n1, since we, our recurrence relation assumed that n was at least 3 by 3 in order to make that expansion. So in other words, we're extending.
This thing works for all n. Once I have got this formula, independently of where these things come from, this will satisfy.
Right.
And this formula works for all n.
Okay, so.
On the other hand, you could do this for deck M2 and M3 if you wanted to.
Well.
Then you wouldn't have that problem, but you have a different problem. You have to work out 3 by 3 determinant, which is a bit harder. You will get the same answer.
Well, I'm not saying I want to do it that way. Right. I'm just asking what allows us to do it.
What allows us to do it is that this recursion, once you've got this recursion relation, it doesn't matter how you solve it, because there's nothing in this formula that tells you that n has got to be greater than zero.
So we can talk about the determinant of a matrix.
Well, we can't talk about the determinant of a matrix of negative dimensionality. We can talk about delta n n minus 2. Because you don't, once you've got this thing, you don't know where it came from, and you don't care. You just want to solve it.
I see that. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, so then you know these two initial conditions. It would be in trouble if I asked you to what delta m naught was. You have no difficulty calculating from this, so it was alpha plus beta. So you didn't know what to write down to calculate some of the determinants or something. So what are the solutions? What are alpha and beta? Let's see. So this is alpha e to u plus beta e to minus u. And this one will be equal to alpha e to u plus beta e to minus u. You might expect to say that means alpha and beta are both 1. But of course that doesn't work here. So what you'll end up with is an alpha is equal to, that's right. E to the u over 2 sin u. And beta is equal to minus e to the minus u over 2 sin u. Can I get rid of this? So, what is det of mn? 1 over 2 sin u is a common factor. And you get e to the u times e to the nu, which is e to the n plus 1 u. Then you get a minus e to the n plus, minus n plus 1 u. That's it. So this is equal to sin of n plus 1 u over sin of u. And so as u goes to 0, this is equal to n plus 1. Is anyone worried about this step? Good. Let's go back to our answer then. Some time ago, we had derived the following formula. X final. X initial 0 is equal to e to the I m x final minus x initial squared over 2 h bar t. Is that right? And then an I
m over 2 pi h bar delta t to the 1 half det of m n minus 1 to the minus 1 half. I'm pretty sure that's what we got. It might look better if I got rid of this term here. Can I get rid of this? Now, if you just stared at this expression, you should be extremely disturbed, because it depends on delta t and it depends on n, or at least on the face of it. And you would have thought that if the path integral is to make any sense whatsoever, it should only depend on physical variables and not how we discretized it. That must be a fiction, and of course, after an enormous amount of effort, we have discovered it is indeed a fiction. Because det m n minus 1 is just n. But this combination is just a total time interval. If that had not happened, we know there would have been some kind of unpleasant mistake somewhere that would have taken ages to find. So this is first of all, common sense, and secondly, agrees with what we found by rather more elementary methods. You have to go through this procedure once, because otherwise you wouldn't really believe that it worked. But you could have calculated this by simply demanding that this thing was appropriately normalized without worrying about anything else. That's because this thing, although it's a normalization factor, can't depend on x initial and x final, because those were fixed. So you could have done this. I think we've missed that. Oh, that's right. So we could have figured out that factor to start with without going through all this business of looking at the fluctuations about some classical path. We did that, first of all, to show that it works, and secondly, because when you do more complicated examples, sometimes you absolutely have to do that. Now, the next thing I wanted to do was the simple harmonic oscillator, but I don't think that there is time right now to do it. Yes? Well, you couldn't, but who cares?
Yes.
What does an overall phase matter? I wouldn't get the I, but I don't care. We're only after an observable. So the simple harmonic oscillator I'll do in an easier way. Yes?
Is there any physical difference between this result and a result from only the classical path?
Over the classical path.
Because we took the
deviations
from the classical path and then we got
the answer is yes, there is a difference. Because if you had just said, oh, it's a classical path, and you hadn't bothered to normalize it, you wouldn't have got that. You've got some other left. It's only by something over all the classical paths that you discover the thing is properly normalized. Sorry, all the paths, not all the classical paths, that you discover it's properly normalized. there are examples which are quite a lot more complicated where there is a huge difference. And I guess David Tong is going to do that. He better do that. Someone put his back to it at some point in the future. Yes.
So is it a general finding that we have a matrix that we could, and is that a more general
form of this? Can you use this trick for other things, or? Yes. Do you often get the determinant of some matrix when you average over the quantum fluctuations? Yes. Sometimes those matrices are differential operators, which is rather more interesting. Here's the matrix which you can more or less cope with easily. So the structure is kind of universal. And of course, you can see that if there were higher order terms in the Lagrangian, I would get higher order terms that I had to deal with. The more higher order terms I get, the more quantum corrections I would get. The advantage of the free particle is that, which you showed in a few other problems, free particle only involves x squared, or up to x squared. And if all you've got is an x squared, then you discover that you can do these intervals exactly. So if it's just zeroth order in x, first order in x, second order in x, it's fine. You can do it exactly. Whereas, suppose for example I said there was a potential that looked like x to the 4, then you find that much worse. So I want to do next simple harmonic oscillator with an x squared potential because I can do that exactly. And I didn't want to go about doing this horrible calculation involving some matrix. I wanted to do it just simply by saying, well, it's got to be appropriately normalized, otherwise it can't possibly work. But you really have to do this once. Okay, well let's stop there for today.
One quick question. What about a 1/r
potential? Can you do? Can I do hydrogen? Exactly. Yeah. Or 1/r. Well, the answer is you must be able to do it. Does anyone recall if it's in
5 minutes? I think it's just that. I didn't like it.
Right, both sides, so not in time. Yeah, I think Claire, can you start by finding something? It's a huge problem. Okay, so he knows better than I do. Can be done, but it's not nice.
Right, I imagine.
Okay, that's what I have.